Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota does not publicly fund preschool education, but there are efforts to ensure excellence in early learning throughout the state. South Dakota Public Broadcasting continues our look at pre-K in South Dakota, and today we talk about the preschool levels of excellence. Rob Monson is with us. He's Executive Director of School Administrators of South Dakota. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you, Lori.
Also joining us, Eric Knight, Superintendent of the Centerville School District. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Kevin Nelson, he's an education consultant and the former principal at Beresford Elementary Public School. Kevin, thanks for being here as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
Rob, let's start with you and tell us a little bit about the School Administrators of South Dakota for an overview, if you would.
Sure. Our organization is made up of what we call parent groups throughout the state, and that is groups of administrators. So we have superintendents, elementary principals, high school principals, business managers, curriculum directors, and special ed directors belong to our nonprofit organization, and our goals are to promote quality education in South Dakota. So our organization tries to provide professional development opportunities to our members, represent them at all sorts of state meetings, different things happening across the state, and then keeping an eye on legislation. I work as their lobbyist for all the public and a few nonprofit, or I should say private schools in the state, watching legislation go through. So statewide, we have, with retirees, close to 900 members. And we're proud of the fact that we do represent all 149 public school districts with membership coming out of each of those. And we look at all sorts of things in education. And one of the things we took on a few years ago, which will segue into where we're going, is the superintendents were having their statewide meeting. And one of them said, we really need to get our feet into preschool education. We really need to move the needle on preschool education in the state. So at that point, we decided we weren't going to ask permission from the state or anyone else. We were going to move forward with what we believed about preschool education. And so we put together an actual standing committee and organization, which elevates everything to a little bit higher level that we're serious about this. We're going to put people from all of our parent groups on there, and we're going to meet at least once a year and move preschool education forward the way we believe it should be. So that's where these two other gentlemen in the room come into play with me. There's an old saying that if you're the smartest guy in the room, you've built the wrong room. So I'm proud to say that having these two on board who have their feet in the trenches yet in the schools and doing the work. Kevin recently retired, but was a very good advocate for preschool. These gentlemen led the committee at one point in time, and Eric now leads the committee, and I'm happy to have them speaking on behalf of early childhood education and helping us move this committee and all of our work forward.
I want to talk first about, you mentioned, you know, we really need to move the needle. We need to move things to a higher level. Let's talk about why. So based on what you know, and Kevin, maybe you're a good person to start with, or bounce around if you want to jump in, what do we know about the importance of this early learning? Why is it important to get involved in it at all?
There's a ton of research out there that shows the impact that preschool education has, you know, going all the way back like to the Perry report, the High Scopes initiative that took place back in the 1960s, and they took hundreds of preschool-age children and put them into two separate groups. Some had high-quality preschool, the other half didn't, so it was a control group, and they followed them 40 years out. And what happened because of that, you know, everything from the group that had preschool had a much higher graduation rate, had better jobs. I mean, there was all of those type of things. And these are things that as educators, we've always known. We've always known that children who come prepared to school, not necessarily already reading all of those type of things, but have a good basket full of activities there. I use the analogy, this is mine and only mine, but I said, you know, every good farmer out there knows that when you plant a corn crop, you take care of it on the early end. If you neglect it on the early end and only are worried about it after the 4th of July when it's knee high or above, there's going to be problems. And I think that's exactly the way we look at it. And I think collectively we've looked at early childhood education as the key to that. Brain research, all the other things indicate that our early intervention into that, and again, we're going to talk about what that means, intervention, but if you're going to have a preschool, quality preschool, those aspects of it have to be there for this thing really to for children really to grow and do the good things that they want when they're ready to hit school.
So as we look at some of the data and some of the research, my big question here is that research building? Are we learning more pretty much every year? Some of the research we've seen might be of a program that was inadequate in a certain location. And that has to do largely with the fact that there isn't a consolidated, universal, one-size-fits-all preschool classroom in the country, right? Do I understand that?
Yeah, I would say that from my standpoint, I got onto this preschool levels of excellence when Rob and some others had reached out. I had, as an elementary principal at the time, had an in our district preschool and saw the effects that it had, but also had kids that were going to preschool outside of our district. And saw different outcomes and things that they were fighting through as well. And then now as a superintendent and having a preschool within our district again, seeing the effects of that and how we can streamline their growth. The biggest thing for me or takeaway for me in terms of the aspect of variance was the lack of governance that we had amongst the state and what you could classify a preschool as. I didn't know that going into this deal and I've learned a lot about it. And so that was a scary part as an educator for me, who could have a preschool, why they could have a preschool, be making money off of that with the lack of guidance or governance over them.
Right. You can call it a preschool. And I think a lot of parents are with you in the sense that as parents have sort of heard these stories throughout the month, that have uncovered some of these things, what parents have already known, which is, there isn't a guiding principle. So, Rob, let's go back to you and talk about how do you begin? How do you start measuring things?
Well, we looked at it from a national perspective first and then sort of sifted that down to our state. We knew when we started looking at what should a preschool, what are the bare minimums a preschool should have? You know, what is that bar they should have to sort of clear to be identified as a preschool? The state of South Dakota does no oversight of any of them. They do with child care centers. So we want to make sure we make a delineation there. There's places who take care of kids and watch them, and then there are actual preschools. So there is oversight on those early learning daycare centers. There is not on preschools. So when we started to look at what bar do they need to cross to be identified as a preschool, because as we joke, Kevin and I joke a lot, a store could open up down the road here and hang a shingle out, you know, Ernie's Bar / preschool. and there's no one coming in and saying, you know, this is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this right now. There's no one, state oversight, et cetera, looking at this. So we thought, let's come up with a criteria that would say, if you're going to be a preschool and you want to be recognized and identified as a levels of excellence preschool through our organization, you need to do this list of things. And Kevin, I'll kick it over to you and let you kind of introduce
what we said they should be doing.
Well, we didn't reinvent the wheel. There's obviously national standards and indicators out there. But we took a look at things that we thought were the most important. And those included relationships. And those relationships are, for example, between a teacher and students, between teachers and parents, all of those type of things. The teaching methods that they're using, are those teaching methods developmentally appropriate for 3- and 4-year-olds? We're concerned about the health and the standards that, you know, and within a setting, how families are handled, the physical environment in there, the curriculum, assessment, who is the teacher, and, you know, what are their credentials, and so on. Community relationships, how does the preschool work not only with the K-12 building or K-12 school, but also in other entities? And then what's the leadership and management of the site? These are basic building blocks, we believe, of any good institution of education, but it applies very much so in this case with a preschool.
It doesn't seem like a particularly revolutionary thing to be asking. What is the environment like? What is it? What, you know, who are the teachers? What kind of relationships? These are some pretty foundational building blocks that
absolutely
you're beginning with. Yeah,
absolutely. And the thing is, we're very well aware that a preschool, for example, in a metro area that is funded well, where the instructors maybe have advanced degrees, are going to be light years away from some of our rural areas where a preschool has no connection whatsoever to the school. It's privately run. It's run out of there. We want to cover all of those areas, but we do believe that there's a basic baseline of what should be there. And you know, part of this is that in the state of South Dakota, a number of years ago, we put together the South Dakota Early Learning Guidelines, which allows us to look at growth and development of children. It looks at early literacy skills, early math skills, and so on and so forth, and how you teach those. And, you know, and we still believe very strongly that preschool is taught through play. It's taught through role modeling. It's done through discovery. You know, we're not talking worksheets. We're not straight lines. We're not, you know, preschool isn't high school math. We believe that those things are there. And so the levels of excellence really is pushing all of that.
So how do preschoolers and communities get involved in it? What's their intersection with the Levels of Excellence program?
Yeah, so if you go to sasd.org and head to that website, there's going to be a Preschool Levels of Excellence tab along the top. Click that tab. It'll ask you, actually has our tool out there. You can review before actually submitting or saying you're interested. We, as moving the needle, we wanted it to be a deal where, you know, the preschool in Centerville could take it and use it as a growth opportunity for themselves, even if they didn't, you know, feel comfortable having an outside person come in and evaluate them. And so we thought that was important. But they can go out there, they can log in and select the tool, and it'll notify Rob that the local preschool is interested, and we'll get them hooked up on how to go through the evaluation process.
And then someone comes to the location itself, walk us through it a little further after that initial contact.
Correct. So it does not have to be a preschool in a school. It could be, you know, in a Lutheran basement or someone's home. As Eric said, they go on and they initiate the process. And we moved to an online tool a couple of years ago, which really made it simple for whoever wants to do this. So they simply log in, they go through the process, do their self-evaluation. And then, as Eric said, it gets submitted to me, and then I search out one of our members somewhere in that area. We try to find someone located close to them. So we'll use Centerville as an example. When Eric's preschool went through it, he had been trained in the Levels of Excellence to do the administrator side. So I shoot him an email, and I say, Eric, we've had a preschool in your area submit. Would you be the administrator to go in and do the other side of it? So then he goes in and does the exact same, uses the exact same tool and looks at it through his eyes. And administrators are trained to do all sorts of observation and evaluation, so it's not a big deal for them to go in and do this. They know a lot of it is happening before they go in. And then they do their observation and they submit it as well. So now we have two documents that are the exact same documents and are through the miracles of technology and software. Those two documents get kind of melded together, and we can see instantly where any discrepancies are. So if the preschool teacher or the person that runs the preschool picked that they were, you know, in the proficient, and Eric comes in and sees, no, you were higher than that, they will come to an agreement on which one is the final submission.
Those discrepancies were probably the largest growth for both preschools that I've been a part of as a direct administrator for. The conversations in terms of moving that needle and growing, those discrepancies opened up wonderful conversations of, hey, we need to grow here, or you're doing a really good job here, some additional resources and strategies.
Give me an example of something that you might need to grow on that's a conversation and then a fairly, you know, easy fix in some of them aren't that complicated to fix.
Yeah, one of ours was a curriculum item where they didn't think that they were addressing some of the curricular needs of the students, and we talked about that it was a research-based curriculum in comparison to some other places. They were doing really, really good things and using that curriculum along with pulling in some of their own strategies and ideas, and they thought they were kind of just, well, I'm going through it and getting by. And so that's just one example, but it was a really good conversation piece.
Right. Another real good example of that, and because I think we probably have parents listening on this, but it was preschool thinking that they were communicating well with parents, and we were looking at it and saying, you really weren't, you know, communicating what you're teaching, where, you know, why you're teaching it, and so on. And so that became a discrepancy in our situation.
How do people do that, Kevin? So, and because it is play-based, and it is, you know, it's we're always in this line where we think, you know, the kids, parents don't necessarily want their kids to be evaluated on how well they play, but yet there is a communication. So talk a little bit more about communication and what sort of things are useful as a preschool communicates with the parents.
Well, I would say one of the very first things that preschool should be play, exploration, hands-on learning. It should be about social interaction and sensory activities and things like that. And what we got to make sure they understand is that it's not necessarily teacher-directed lessons and paper and pencil tasks and assessments and rote memorization. And so the communication about what the goals are here and what's developmentally appropriate, that's the term we keep talking about over and over again, is that what we're emphasizing here is what should be developmentally appropriate. How we're teaching 3- and 4-year-olds is going to be significantly different than what we teach 7-year-olds or 17-year-olds. And I think that those things are all going to be a part of that communication. And that's on a daily basis. You know, that's newsletters that have come home, and that's open discussion between instructors and parents, for example. It's that type of environment that a quality preschool, like any school, is going to have.
That really helps parents at home figure out just how to be a stronger family, too.
Absolutely.
And they understand that brain development in a way that they don't necessarily have time to go,
right,
you know, read every book on child development.
and what's really amazing with the preschool levels of excellence is that any parent can go to the website. They can click on it, and they can look at this whole model, at every indicator on there, and they can... There's two things here. They can take a look at the preschool that they're sending their children to and make any decision on whether or not they think that their child's getting a quality education. But we also want to remember that we're not advocating for every child to go to preschool. We're saying that if you do send your child to a preschool, we want them to have a quality experience. We also understand that there are many children who are at home with their parents and are getting a wonderful quality experience there too. And this will help them also. This means that any parent could take a look at it and say, if I'm working every day, I'm a stay-home mom or dad and I'm staying home and I'm working with my children on early literacy skills, is that of quality? We're here to help you with that too. So
tell me about the different levels, Rob.
Yes, I wanted to go back and kind of close that out. Once we have those two documents brought together, the final one gets submitted by the administrator who did that observation, comes into our office, and again, through the miracle of technology, the software does all the scoring for us. So it's not on Eric's shoulders, it's not on Kevin's shoulders or my shoulders. The software spits out the level by basing all the criteria that we put in ahead of time, weighted different things, and it comes out with a level of excellence based on a number. And so once we have that, two things happen. We send a certificate to the preschool that went through the process. And then if they choose, we also host their name on our website. And right now we're at 20-plus sites that have gone through the process. Our goal in 2021 is to get 60% of the school districts or 60% of our members to have gone through the process. So that's what we're striving for right now.
So out of 149 public school districts, you have 60?
Our goal is to get to 60.
Our goal is to get to 60. Yep. Say again,
so
how many you had?
We have 20 right now that have gone through the process. So we're about a third of the way there of where we would really like to be.
All right. Hmm. And different levels then?
Different levels. Yeah. Kevin, you have them up there. It's the highest level is exemplary. And that's certainly what we'd like to have, you know, everyone trying to achieve to. Proficient, distinguished, and exemplary. Yeah. Are the three levels.
Is it fee-based at all?
No, there's absolutely no cost to this. This is something our organization believes in. And as far as the process, there really is no cost to it. The people can go on and do it on their own. And one thing I would like to mention is one of our goals really when we started this was the conversations that will be held. So if you don't have a preschool in the Centerville School District and it's being housed out in a church basement, they go through levels of excellence. They might be short on providing CPR training. Well, that's a conversation Eric can say, you know what? Next week we're having an early release. We'd love to have your people come in and sit through that CPR with us. And the next step down the road is we're not qualified to teach reading, or we don't understand this reading teaching you're talking about. super. We're having an early release next week again. Come on in and let's have that conversation. So it's really helping everyone by us opening these conversations and having these dialogues.
Hmm. How are you getting the word out about this too? And tell me some of the feedback you've been getting from the schools themselves.
Well, we've done a number of different trainings at the State Elementary Principals Conferences. Kevin has gone out to a number of the area, kind of the local principal meetings. We've had some newspaper coverage. We've had a little bit of television coverage. But really, it's word of mouth. You know, we try and get it out to our members who are in touch with people in their communities and just really trying to get as much awareness as we can in getting people to at least take a look at it. And I think back to Kevin's comment about how parents could look at this. And, you know, I came from a home where mom got to stay home and we had, you know, someone there doing these things with us. You know, society has changed immensely in those you know, are few and far between now. And so we're hoping that anyone who can look at this tool and use anything that's in here, it's going to benefit all of these young kiddos.
Well, and for parents, Kevin, there's a lot of conflicting information as people try to market to you with what is good for you, you know, for your children, you know, from the latest app to, you know, whatever's going to help them, you know, get a head start on reading. So having that research-based information as a parent, is there any kind of intervention a screening component to any of this where kids are being sort of, you know, identified if they have early learning problems? Is that part of this at all, or is this mostly, you know, facility-based?
Yeah, and I think that one of the first things you would need to understand about that is that preschool, that there's actually, in a lot of districts, there's already two funded preschool components, and that would be Head Start, for example. And then also many districts have a special needs preschool. So you have a child who is not yet in kindergarten, who is on an IEP and so on. And so some of those things are there. Then after that, in the Centervilles of the world, for example, they are funding preschool through their district and some others are, but most places are not. And they're not doing that, you know, in that setting. So you're all over the board on what preschool looks like. What we're looking here for is a common denominator that says, at a minimum, here are the standards that we have. This is what we need to have in place. That's where that's at. Anything beyond that is going to be local practices. You know, for example, if they're coming in and they do a pre-screening on things, then they have a pre-screening. Not every preschool is going to do that. We're not into that part of it. What we're into instead is those areas, like we said, relationships and teaching practices and curriculum.
Rob, final thoughts on, you mentioned your work, you know, watching the state legislature and peer. Well, what are your thoughts on the next session in the preschool conversation?
Well, there's been a couple of attempts over the last 3 or 4 years to just try and get a commission in place or a council that, you know, can kind of oversee what's happening with preschool and have the ability to go out and apply for some grants and do those kind of things. And twice we have seen that defeated. I think this year they're going to sort of take a step back. The people who have been behind pushing some of this, kind of take a step back, build some coalitions, see where we're at, and then plan next step. So I really don't see much happening this session in early childhood.
Rob Monson is Executive Director of School Administrators of South Dakota, Eric Knight, Superintendent of Centerville School District, Kevin Nelson, an education consultant and the former principal at Beresford Elementary Public School. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find all our conversations about preschool in South Dakota on our website at listen.sdpb.org.